Chapter 54 Prax. May sat on Prax's lap, but her attention was focused with a laser intensity to her left. She put her hand up to her mouth and gently, deliberately, deposited a wad of half-chewed spaghetti into her palm, then held it out toward Amos. "It's yucky," she said. The big man chuckled.
"Well, if it wasn't before, it sure is now, Pumpkin," he said, unfolding his napkin. "Why don't you put that right here?"
"I'm sorry," Prax said.
"She's just a kid, Doc," Amos said. "This is what she's supposed to do."
They didn't call the dinner a dinner. It was a reception sponsored by the United Nations at the New Hague facilities on Luna. Prax couldn't tell if the wall was a window or an ultra-high-definition screen. On it, Earth glowed blue and white on the horizon. The tables were spread around the room in a semi-organic array that Avasarala had explained was the current fashion. Makes it look like some asshole just put them up anywhere. The room was almost equally people he knew and people he didn't, and watching them segregate was fascinating in its way. To his right, several small tables were filled with short, stocky men and women in professional suits and military uniforms, orbiting around Avasarala and her amused-looking husband, Arjun. They gossiped about funding system analysis and media relations control. Every outer planet's hand they shook was an inclusion that their subjects of conversation denied. To his left, the scientific group was dressed in the best clothes they had. Dress jackets that had fit 10 years before, and suits representing at least half a dozen different design seasons. Earthers and Martians and Belters all mixed in that group. But the talk was just as exclusionary. Nutrient grades, adjustable permeability membrane technologies, phenotypic force expressions. Those were both his people from the past and his future. The shattered and reassembled society of Ganymede. If it hadn't been for the middle table with Bobby and the crew of the Rocinante, he would have been there, talking about cascade arrays and non-visible feeding chloroplasts. But in the center, isolated and alone, Holden and his crew were as happy and at peace as if they'd been in their own galley, burning through the vacuum. And May, who had taken a fancy to Amos, still wouldn't be physically parted from Prax without starting to yell and cry. Prax understood exactly how the girl felt, and didn't see it as a problem.
"So, living on Ganymede, you know a lot about low-gravity childbearing, right?" Holden said. "It's not really that much riskier for Belters, is it?"
Prax swallowed a mouthful of salad and shook his head.
"Oh no, it's tremendously difficult, especially if it's just a shipboard situation without extensive medical controls. If you look at naturally occurring pregnancies, there's a developmental or morphological abnormality 5 times out of 6.
5? Holden said.
"Most of them are germline issues, though," Prax said. "Nearly all of the children born on Ganymede were implanted after a full genetic analysis. If there's a lethal equivalent, they just drop the zygote and start over. Non-germline abnormalities are only twice as common as on Earth, though, so that's not so bad."
"Ah," Holden said, looking crestfallen.
"Why do you ask?"
"No reason," Naomi said. "He's just making conversation."
"Daddy, I want tofu,"
May said, grabbing his earlobe and yanking it.
"Where's tofu?"
"Let's see if we can't find you some tofu," Prax said, pushing his chair back from the table. "Come on."
As he walked across the room, scanning the crowd for a dark, formal suit belonging to a waiter as opposed to a dark, formal suit belonging to a diplomat, a young woman came up to him with a drink in one hand and a flush on her cheeks.
"You're Praxitiki Mung," she said. "You probably don't remember me."
No, he said.
"I'm Carol Kiyosowski," she said, touching her collarbone as if to clarify what she meant by "I."
"We wrote to each other a couple of times right after you put out the video about May."
"Oh, right," Prax said. trying desperately to remember anything about the woman or the comments she might have left.
I just want to say, I think both of you are just so, so brave, the woman said, nodding.
It occurred to Prax that she might be drunk.
Son of a fucking whore,
Avasarla said, loud enough to cut through the background buzz of conversations. The crowd turned to her. She was looking at her hand terminal.
What's a whore, Daddy?
It's a kind of frost, honey, Prax said. What's going on?
Holden's old boss beat us to the punch, Avasarla said. I guess we know what happened to all those fucking missiles he stole.
Arjun touched his wife's shoulder and pointed at Prax. She actually looked abashed.
Sorry for the language, she said. I forgot about her.
Holden appeared at Prax's shoulder.
My boss?
Fred Johnson just put on a display, Avasarla said. Nguyen's monsters? We've been waiting for them to come closer to Mars before we took them down. Transponders are all chirping away, and we've got them all tracked tighter than a fly's... Well, they crossed into the belt, and he nuked them. All of them.
That's good, though, Prax said. I mean, isn't that good?
Not if he's doing it, Avasarla said. He's flexing muscles, showing that the belt's got an offensive arsenal now.
A man in uniform to Avasarala's left started talking at the same time as a woman just behind her, and, in a moment, the need to declaim had spread through the whole group. Prax pulled away. The drunk woman was pointing at a man and talking rapidly, Prax and May forgotten. He found a waiter at the edge of the room, extracted a promise of tofu, and went back to his seat. Amos and May immediately started playing at who could blow their nose the hardest, and Prax turned to Bobby.
Are you going to go back to Mars, then? He asked.
It seemed like a polite, innocuous question until Bobby pressed her lips tight and nodded.
I am, she said. Turns out my brother's getting married. I'm going to try to get there in time to screw up his bachelor party. What about you? Taking the old lady's position?
Well, I think so, Prax said, a little surprised that Bobby had heard about Avasarla's offer. It hadn't been made public yet.
I mean, all of the basic advantages of Ganymede are still there. The magnetosphere, the ice. If even some of the mirror arrays can be salvaged, it would still be better than starting again from nothing. I mean, the thing you have to understand about Ganymede...
Once he started on the subject, it was hard for him to stop. In many ways, Ganymede had been the center of civilization in the outer planets. All the cutting-edge plant work had been there, all the life sciences issues. But it was more than that. There was something exciting about the prospect of rebuilding that was, in its fashion, even more interesting than the initial growth. To do something the first time was an exploration. To do it again was to take all the things they had learned and refine, improve, perfect. It left Prax a little bit giddy. Bobby listened with a melancholy smile on her face. And it wasn't only Ganymede. All of human civilization had been built out of the ruins of what had come before. Life itself was a grand chemical improvisation that began with the simplest replicators and grew and collapsed and grew again. Catastrophe was just one part of what always happened. It was a prelude to what came next.
You make it sound romantic, Bobby said. And the way she said it was almost an accusation.
I don't mean to, Prax began, and something cold and wet wriggled its way into his ear. He pulled back with a yelp, turning to face May's bright eyes and brilliant smile. Her index finger dripped with saliva, and beyond her, Amos was laughing himself crimson, one hand grasping at his belly and the other slapping the table hard enough to make the plates rattle.
What was that?
Hi, Daddy. I love you.
Here, Alex said, passing Prax a clean napkin. You're gonna want that.
The startling thing was the silence.
He didn't know how long it had been going on, but the awareness of it washed over him like a wave. The political half of the room was still and quiet. Through the forest of their bodies, he saw Avasarala bending forward, her elbows on her knees, her hand terminal inches in front of her face. When she stood up, they parted before her. She was such a small woman, but she commanded the room just by walking out of it.
"That's not good," Holden said, rising to his feet.
Without another word, Prax and Naomi, Amos and Alex and Bobby all followed after her. The politicians and the scientists came too, all of them mixing at last. The meeting room was across a wide hall and set up in the model of an ancient Greek amphitheater. The podium at the front stood before a massive high-definition screen. Avasarala marched down to a seat, talking fast and low into her hand terminal. The others trailed in after her. The sense of dread was physical. The screen went black, and someone dimmed the lights. In the darkness of the screen, Venus stood in near silhouette against the sun. It was an image Prax had seen hundreds of times before. The feed could have come from any of a dozen monitoring stations. The timestamp on the lower left said they were looking back in time 47 minutes. A ship name, the Celestine, floated beneath the numbers. Every time the protomolecule soldiers had been involved in violence, Venus had reacted. The OPA had just destroyed 100 of its half-human soldiers. Prax felt himself caught between excitement and dread. The image scattered and reformed, some kind of interference confusing the sensors. Avasarala said something sharp that could have been, "Show me." A few seconds later, the image stopped and reframed. A detail screen showing a gray-green ship. A heads-up display marked it the Merman. The image scattered again, and when it reformed, the Merman had moved half an inch to the left and was spinning end over end, tumbling. Avasarala spoke again. A few seconds lag, and the screen went back to its original image. Now that Prax knew to look, he could see the tiny dot of the Merman moving near the penumbra. There were other tiny specks like it. The dark side of Venus pulsed like a sudden planetary flash of lightning under the obscuring clouds, and then it glowed. Vast filaments, thousands of kilometers long, like spokes on a wheel, lit white and vanished. The clouds of Venus shifted, disturbed from below. Prax had the powerful memory of seeing a wake on the surface of a water tank when a fish passed close underneath. Vast and glowing, it rose through the cloud cover. Spoke-like strands of iridescence arced with vast lightning storms, coming together like the arms of an octopus but connected to a rigid central node. Once it had climbed out of Venus's thick cloud cover, it launched itself away from the sun, toward the viewing ship, but passing it. The other ships in its path were scattered and hurled away. A long plume of displaced Venusian atmosphere caught the sun and glowed like snowflakes and slivers of ice. Prax tried to make sense of the scale. As large as Ceres Station. As large as Ganymede. Larger. It folded its arms, its tentacles, together, accelerating without any visible drive plume. It swam in the void. His heart was racing, but his body was still as stone. May patted his cheek with her open palm and pointed to the screen. "What's that?" she asked.